WEEI afternoons coming into the 4 o'clock hour. That means it's 4 o'clock football time, but we do have some callers that want to chime in a little on our Red Sox celebration talk. Never knew. The beauty of radio, you just never know what people want to react to or talk about. So let's go to John in the car regarding our Sox celebration talk. What's up, John?
Hey, I'm glad you guys brought this up because I've been thinking all season. It looks like the charade symbol for a movie.
Yes,
there it is. Two words, yeah. Movie.
Movies.
And I'm like,
that's a deep party pull from the 70s.
I can't imagine there's charades players.
That's what it is, my man. Great call.
All right, thanks for the call, John.
I was like, the charade, you know, movie. Yeah. When you say, yes,
thank you.
Last time
you had a good old-fashioned game, it's been a minute since I had a good old charades party.
I haven't had a charades. And charades was like, that's what they did when you were poor. Like I was. You played charades.
I'm a big board game guy.
So, that's what what parents used to do, like in the 70s and 80s. Like there'd be charades parties,
Monopoly can
followed
go
by
itself.
Handles of gin, and then people cheating on each other.
Yeah.
Hold on, Teddy. Can you expand on Monopoly can go screw itself?
It can
real
go
quick?
Screw.
Okay. What?
Same. Monopoly can go screw.
It takes 5 hours.
I don't get it.
Not if you play it right.
It takes forever.
I don't get the. You know, seriously. I hated Monopoly. It never made sense to me. I couldn't understand. If you need like a PhD to play a game. Then it's probably not a good game.
Buy hotel. Yeah. Well, there goes our idea for WEI afternoon hotels.
Well, good news is at 5:30 you can show your brains in Quiz with Stiz.
Hey, Trivial Pursuit.
Undefeated. I love Trivial Pursuit.
It's my
Trivial
favorite.
It's a great fun game. Because they're all well written and there's always clues in the question that
guys
helps
ever
you
play.
Answer.
Guys ever play talk? Cards Against Humanity, the inappropriate adult version. Outstanding.
I know that it was a hot game for a while. I just never got into it, man. Never played it, so I don't know what I was missing out on.
All right, Jim in Northampton, what are your thoughts on the Sox celebrations?
Okay, quick three points. The celebration, they were doing that stupid celebration when Devers was there, so it's nothing new. I absolutely hate it. Act like you've been there before. Get a base hit, get a double. Don't do this stupid thing like you're in Little League. They could be down 7 runs, they still do it. And my third and most important point is if this was back in the good old days when you had Bob Gibson or Nolan Ryan and one of the Red Sox players did that stupid gesture after getting a hit, the next batter would get a fastball to the head. and the batter that got on base that did that stupid gesture, next time he was up, he would get beamed. And every time after, Bob Gibson, Nolan Ryan would drill him. That's what we need. They need to act like they've been there before. Every old-time baseball fan like me hates it when the NASA camera shows them doing that stupid gesture. Get a base hit, act like you've been there before.
Thanks for the call, Jim.
I just got to tell you.
That guy's favorite
seems
receiver.
Seems like a lot of fun.
Bet his favorite receiver is Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah, no.
I feel like Jim just it doesn't quite understand that he's not the target audience anymore.
And
they're not targeting you, Jim. Sorry.
Also, guess what, Jim? It's not the era of Nolan Ryan. It's different
a new era.
Because guess what? Pitchers also do things now. Have you ever seen your closer, Aroldis Chapman, stare down every guy he strikes out? In the old days, the other team's pitcher would have beamed his batter. And, like, it's a different time where they're trying to be entertaining and have fun.
Who was it? It was E-Rod who walked off the mound to...
Yes.
Yeah, but that's different than doing it every time you get hit. Now, I will say, don't other teams have their own little celebrations for the same thing?
Almost all of them.
So I feel like if everybody's doing it, Jim, I hear you, man. I'm old school, too. But I think that's a thing for every team in major leagues is when you get on base, you have some gesture that you have towards to the dugout.
If you watch more baseball, Jim, and just watch doubles, just focus on doubles. When guys land at second base, they all do something.
Yeah.
It's almost
But what's the difference between like football players? Like if they catch a 30-yard pass or, you know, I guess a touchdown is like the pinnacle, but there's a lot of football celebrations, no?
That's what we
they
should
encourage sellies now. They run down and do the camera and they all get together.
Football's been celebrating since the 70s, but baseball hasn't. Baseball's added it lately.
I like that though. It's you should have like one celebration if you just get a single, one first. Like in football, if you get a first down for 10 yards, you don't get up and do like the electric wave, right?
Somebody just does like the first
you do
down.
The first down.
Wait, Ted, because we talked about it a ton on Monday because I had gone to the game on Sunday. What do you think about the whole phenomenon of the Savannah Bananas and doing that energetic crowd, fan loving, kid enjoyable, dancing, showboating style of sports?
When it's in that environment, I have no problem with it.
And some of that is going to seep over into regular baseball regular sports.
Andy, you know what it is in a lot of ways? It's like nonviolent baseball wrestling. Like, it's a sport. Technically, it counts, but it's just a show.
Right. Oh, it's 100%.
It's an exhibition show using a professional sport.
And a one-off. Or a two-off. And then it moves to the next city and sees the next crowd.
But Jim is the perfect example of the old guard trying to work with the new guard. There's older managers.
Listens to baseball on your phone.
There's old managers that don't like how, you know, after a guy hits the ball, he flips the bat.
Right.
And so remember, so we've had to work through this.
How about we worked through one of the greatest players that's ever played the game of baseball? There were a lot of people that had issues that Ken Griffey Jr. wore his hat backwards for batting practice and warm-ups and
that's
things of that.
That's disrespectful.
You still can't have a beard on the Yankees.
Yeah.
They actually updated that. You can have a well-coiffed beard or whatever you want to call
it. Oh, you can now?
If it's manicured, you can do it. But my point is, like, it is generational. And I played high school football at a place where you did not celebrate touchdowns. Act like you've been there before and will be there again, was the way it was expressed to you by the guy who had coached for 50 years. Like, that's how it was. You just didn't. There were no single-digit numbers because we're a team and nobody wears one. Like, and then it evolves as time goes on, and it's just a different world. And if we're being honest, I like it. Like, baseball needs a little more energy.
It does. They need a little bit more character.
The alternative league is selling more tickets for like 20 games than MLB is selling for hundreds.
But
there's a reason why. The people are telling MLB, speed it up, make it fun, engage the crowd. This is what they need. This is definitely what they need.
Okay, but we're not doing 4 o'clock football on celebrations. That's another one we can do. Best football celebration, sure, whatever. But today we decided we were going to rank the Patriots position groups. So quarterback, running back, tight end, wide receiver, you know all the groups. And we just mentioned PFF had the cornerback group as fifth best in the NFL, or secondary group, excuse me, secondary.
Overall secondary.
Fifth best in the NFL. So who wants to start? Ted Johnson, how about we start with what is your worst position group on the Patriots? What did you have dead last in your rankings?
My dead last was the offensive line.
Ooh.
Was dead last.
Ruh-roh.
Yeah. It's
That's a bad signal.
I don't think that's any big surprise. It's they got Will Campbell. You know, I don't know anything about Garrett Bradbury other than he's not a very good pass blocker, right? He's
not based on the numbers.
He can run block, but he can't pass block, so that concerns me. The guy literally right over the quarterback. You know, Mike Onwenu. I don't know which one am I getting. Am I getting Mike Onwenu from 2 years ago or the one from last year? So. And, you know, you like to think Morgan Moses is in an upgrade. So it's a better overall offensive line than it was last year. But it was a horrible offensive line last year. So it's still, even with all the additions, to me, it's still probably the worst position group on this team.
Yeah. Fitzy.
Boy, howdy. Like, no, not even close.
O-line?
Yeah, 100%. Now, you may be saying, like, yeah, but this wide receiver room stinks. And people keep putting that in the bottom quarter, bottom eighth of the NFL. There is literally, Andrew, not a single certainty on the offensive line amongst the proposed starters. Is Will Campbell ready to play left tackle? Is he a guard? We're not sure yet. Can Cole Strange beat out Laydon Robinson or Ben Brown or Jared Wilson? We're not sure. Will Garrett Bradbury be able to hold off Cole Strange or Ben Brown or Jared Wilson? Is Mike Onwenu going to get over 400 pounds and return to his all-pro self from a couple years ago? Is Morgan Moses going to hold up at the age of 35 at right tackle on this team? I have no answers to any of those things. The most question marks, still the worst group.
So, as usual, I am a little bit different than the rest.
Oh, yes, genius walks alone.
Not by a lot, though, because I actually had the offensive line.
You couldn't even finish the sentence.
I actually had the offensive line ranked ninth. My 10th spot, I went with the specialists just because I have a lot of concern with a rookie kicker.
I just went
rookie,
1 through 9, so it's basically you're agreeing with us.
Okay,
it's the worst.
I'm worried about a rookie long snapper. Despite what I read from Mike Reese that he's the greatest long snapper in the history of long snappers, and his like time to the holder is like 3/4 of a second faster than anybody else's whatever. Rookie kicker, rookie long snapper, I have questions. And then I went offensive line for my 9 spot. Okay. 8th, I'll go next. Fitzy, you mentioned it. Like, I still think the wide receiver position is down there.
I got him at 8.
I look at the wide receiver position, and we've talked about this. Like, if it all goes right, it could be much higher than this. I'll acknowledge that. But if it all goes wrong, or even just if it kind of all goes the way it went last year to some degree, it's one of the worst positions on the team. And the one guy you hope is the good guy is coming off a torn ACL at the age of 30, and when is he ready? When's he at his best? When's he at full speed? Major question mark. So wide receivers, still near the bottom of the team.
It's number eight for me out of nine. And so there, look, both of those position groups, offensive line and wide receiver group, was the worst last year.
Yeah.
And what does that say? That it's still the worst. And they've made upgrades. That I think it shows you how bad it was last year. I still think those are the two worst position groups on the team a year later.
This is a big question that needs to be asked. Aside from Steph Diggs still recovering from a non-contact ACL injury, how many of the wide receivers on the Patriots would make other rosters?
It is a very good question.
One or two, depending on
none
health,
are locks.
Depth.
No. None are locks.
None are locks on this.
None are There's locks.
No, can you? You can't actually. I'm so glad you said that because I think the
only
DeMar's lock
August
is like
is a lock.
Matt this, Collins. No, is no, a no. Lock. I'm talking about for other teams.
Yeah,
I'm,
like
and then you're talking about this team. You said they're not locks for this team.
No.
He just said that.
He said which of these guys would make other teams.
I can't guarantee you. Aside from I think aside from
is a lock.
Pop Douglas and Kyle Williams are the only two I would certify.
I think Matt Collins is
Matt Collins.
A lock.
Yeah.
For this team. Yeah. For this
what
team.
What does that say?
And Steph Diggs, I think, is a lock.
Right. So yeah. Three, maybe four.
Yeah. But it's not a good group. I always like to say just because a group is competitive doesn't mean it's good.
You can have a lot of competition with bad people. Your boy Jalen Polk
makes it? I don't think there's a shot in hell he makes it. There is a shot in hell. Yeah, that was a little harsh. Okay. There's a shot in hell, but it's an uphill battle. Okay. Fitzy, what's up next?
Okay. Well, see, I went specialist at eight, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we all have the same groups of positions near the bottom. So let's flip this around. Let's go the other way. Let's jump up to the top of the list. Ted Johnson, what do you say is the best position on this football team?
I got the top three positions all on defense. I got the cornerbacks at number one. I have the defensive line at number two, and I have the safeties at number three.
Wow.
Do we share a brain?
Well, maybe.
You guys want to go do karate in the garage together?
It's the craziest thing, because I have the same. Do you have the same top
three? No, I don't, actually. Oh. My top three. Okay. So Ted, once again, yours?
Yeah, mine's quarterbacks number one, and then I got D-line number two with safeties coming in at number three.
I have cornerbacks number one, running backs number two, defensive line number three. I think we are sleeping on how good this running back room can be.
If they hold on to the ball.
Ramondre Stevenson looks like he's in terrific shape. Yes, he does have to work on the ball control issues. Did well his rookie season with Josh McDaniels. Travion Henderson, we all know as the leader of the Travion Henderson Appreciation Society, I think the sky is the limit for this kid. Antonio Gibson, underrated wideout / running back, a hybrid that I think Josh McDaniels might have a field day with. And this Lane Larison kid led all of the NCAA. Come on, allow me to hype up my undrafted guys. You know how much I love a running back with a stash and a perm, let alone somebody who led the NCAA in all pass catching stats. Andy, come on now. Plus, your boy Lampy, the fullback, he's making the team, and he's going to have an impact.
So Lane Larson gets him the two spot at running back. But you're going to ignore the $190 million invested at the defensive tackle position because the guy's got a perm and a mustache?
Because I gave them three. No, you want to know why? Milton Williams and Christian Barmore are great. I have Jeremiah Farms, Jaquelin Roy, Kyrese Tonga. It's Jag Stiff and who the rest of the way around the defensive line.
But the problem is, for me, at the running back position, and Ted, you and I touched on this yesterday, could there be upside? Absolutely. If you get the best of Ramondre Stevenson and Travion Henderson is the budding superstar that everybody wants him to be. Okay, at the end of the year, that position may be really highly ranked. But if you get the guy who fumbled seven times last year and looked like he got worn down and lost a little something, and maybe that's why he appears to have gotten in better shape and lost some weight. Maybe he feels like he did lose something last year and was kind of heavier, less quick, taking hits, whatever it may be. There is some reason to be skeptical about that position. There really is.
And you can argue as well, okay, the way that I approached it was like physically the defensive line. I wasn't thinking about the edge rushers. If you want to lump them in there as well, then yeah, you could easily argue that those should be flip-flopped as well. But I was just focusing on those five guys. And while the $196 million should be lauded at the same time, I got questions around them.
All right, so I gave you my one, two, and three.
Yeah.
All on the offensive side, or excuse me, defensive side of the ball. Cornerbacks, D-line, and safety. And then for 4, 5, and 6, they're all on the offensive side. I have the running backs at number four.
Okay.
For all the reasons that Fitzy already went through. And
Thank
then
you.
The tight end group, which I think is a little bit disrespected, I think, because I think as a whole, they're pretty good. I don't think they're best tight end. You know, Hunter Henry maybe is you're not going to talk about him as a top 10 tight end, but I think the group is a better group than people think. So I got them at a five, and then at number six, I got our quarterback, Drake May. So 4, 5, and 6 are all offensive positions.
I also have the quarterback at number six, which I don't know if that's good or bad in a quarterback-driven league and the year two jump. And
for a guy that was 1-9, I think it's pretty good.
It's probably fair. Yeah. It's probably pretty fair. And the tight end position I do think is a little disrespected, underrated, whatever it may be, just because they don't have a huge upside. But if you ask me to, if you ask me to, like, who would you trust with their life to actually do their job in any given game? I feel like Austin Hooper and Hunter Henry, I'd feel pretty good about it. Maybe the safeties I'd put in that group, because Kyle Duggar, Jabril Peppers, that should be a good safety group.
Yeah.
The Epps guy that they brought in. So that's similar to tight end, I feel like, as a group that you could trust. But I think this is an interesting exercise to kind of put things. And the worst part of this, if you're being honest, the worst part of this as a Patriots fan is what you said. The worst positions on the team last year are still the worst positions on the team. Like,
no matter how much work they did, how much roster flipping and drafting and signing they did, we still walk in with so many of the same questions as last year. That just shows you how bad and shame on us those teams were the last couple of years.
Which is why up next here, we're going to talk about grading the offseason. We all get a little giddy throughout the process. Oh, they won March. They won April. The Patriots are great. Vrabel. Elliott Wolf's doing the job. All of this. And yet, we just ranked their two biggest positions of need heading into the offseason as their two worst positions on the roster. So ESPN has graded the offseasons. We'll see if you agree with what they think Mike Vrabel and company did down in Foxborough. We'll talk about that next year on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball, with that nice white crisp hat you have on, tell me what's trending. Will Middlebrooks and the Middlebrooks girls have good taste? I like this. Proud to say I'm a girl dad, too. I don't know what that means, why that influences my taste in music. I like this.
Wait, this is Pink Daughters Pony Club?
Daughters influence us. My daughter influences me over music more than my son does.
Pink Pony Club.
I do not have a daughter.
I like it.
Missing out, brother.
I know.
It is.
You're missing out good and bad.
Probably be
so
fun.
Probably
be a lot less whiz on the toilet seat.
Have another one, Nick.
I'd say between the ages of 10 and 14. The daughters get sharp tongues, and
that's kind of true. I'm out the other side.
And
she's 16 now, and I think we're out the other side.
You get to college, and then they really realize how much they need dad.
Okay,
and so it's
going to get better.
It gets better. Oh yeah,
Because there was definitely a phase where I was not overly comfortable.
What? What about? Are you in that phase where they're embarrassed by how you dress, how you talk, how you relate to them?
Yes, I get bullied by them like you guys bully me. When I walk in, they're like, Do you think that matches?
Are you going to wear those shoes?
Out with that?
You're wearing Hey Dudes?
Really? And they mock me. You know the worst place is? The school gymnasium. If I have to walk across and I see the bleachers and they're all there.
Oh, it's horrifying.
And I can see them, like, looking at me, talking about me,
he's
mocking.
Coming, he's coming to me.
Oh,
here
visor,
we go.
This,
do you ever
that?
Have those moments where it's just sort of like, but where's the rest of your shirt?
Yeah.
Yeah?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I always wear a good shirt.
That must make every other girl dad feel better out there. If a guy who won 3 Super Bowls with the Patriots and Tom Brady, his daughter, was still like, Dad, you're embarrassing me.
Yeah, that's a good point. They
still just a dad.
Not even like the guy that won 3 Super Bowls. The guy who just handed 300-pound humans their lunch for 10 straight years.
They could care less about all that.
Right.
If something's barely off, shoes, a tie, a shirt, I get crushed, but I wouldn't want any other way, you know?
Right.
I love it.
It's just part
it's
of
good.
your home dynamic
That's
or whatever,
it.
Your
That's
life
it.
Dynamic. And I might add that too, because I always say everybody's got a boss. Well, everybody, if you have a daughter, has like a different kind of boss.
Keeps me in check,
a critiquer,
boy.
An analyst, whatever you want to call
it. Both the kids. They're like I call them like they're my guardrails, like in a bowling alley. My ball doesn't go in the gutter. They keep me right, kind of honest and on the track.
Okay, so speaking of keeping it honest, did we get a little ahead of ourselves in the spring? Maybe celebrating the Patriots offseason a little bit too much?
No. Uh-oh.
Talking about, Steve, you okay?
Well, I just have good audio that I'm going to tell you about.
You're very excited. Your mouth is a gate back there.
Andrew Callahan thinks that we on this show were a little too...
I heard that, and he's talking at these two. He's not talking to me.
No, he most definitely is.
He's talking to you two, because he said, I believe the quote was like, on the other station or something. Yeah, he's calling these guys out. Play the audio.
Oh, interesting.
Play this audio, Stiz.
folks on the other station think they're ticketed for 10, 11 wins, and that's fine to me. I look, and I think 8, 9 is about fine because at that point, you're twice as good as you were a year ago. And the simplest way to improve as a football team is do exactly what the Patriots did. Improve a head coach, improve a quarterback with Drake May, and improve an offensive coordinator, but you still have question marks at the spots down below, pass protection, pass catcher, everything else that's involved. So to look, you're a 4-win team. I think you'll be an 8-9 win team. That's where they should be.
I love it. I love the other station. It's WEEI, so I'll never go on your podcast again, Andrew. That's good.
And
no, you
got him.
We got him. I love how 8-9 is so different from 10 wins. Like
big 5-12 is one
big
thing.
Difference.
5-12 would be like, oh dear God, what happened? Whereas 10 wins would be spectacular. And I will say, since Callahan is friend of many here, I had a conversation with him yesterday. And one of the, we were just talking football.
Folks on the other station.
Okay. I was talking to folks from the other newspaper.
WEI.
He's the guy from the other newspaper. Okay. So I was talking to a guy from the other newspaper.
That's good. Good job.
Thank you. It's a little turn of phrase every now and again. And one of the things that jumped out at me was, hey, we might be like underestimating some depth issues on this team.
I think there's all kinds of issues
that's the first thing that jumped
people
out
people on
me
this station
Ted,
and this
like,
show.
There is.
There could be some serious depth issues.
Yeah, defensive line scares me to death. There's not a lot of depth there. No. Defensive line, offensive line, not a lot of depth. No.
Zero depth on offensive.
Yeah, wide receivers, not a lot of depth there. No. So yeah, if a guy or two gets hurt, kind of you saw what it did to the Red Sox when Casas and Bregman go down. It kind of threw a wrench
into
everything.
Who's the David Hamilton of the Patriots?
Whoever it is, Andy will love him because that's Andy's guy. But
thump his chest, talk about his bow.
I think the most depth is on the defensive
Brown
side.
Jersey. Yes.
And I think when it comes to second, I think there's a plethora of secondary safety corners, slot corners.
Yes.
That they can. I even think linebackers.
Why you only have two boundary corners?
Is the one that
though,
makes
Ted.
Me nervous.
That's it. That like there's two good boundary corners.
Dude, in a pinch, you can have Marcus Jones play on the boundary, even though he's more of a slot. I mean,
Austin's on the smaller side as well. Isaiah Bolden is unproven. Marcellus Dial is unproven.
But Isaiah Bolden had a pick six in the mini camp that I was at.
Plus,
and so there's this. There are actually guys that aren't big names that have kind of hung around here that I think are gonna all of a sudden they're gonna be used in a way that they haven't been used, and you're gonna see them playing better than you've seen them play in the past.
And depth is better when it's actually depth. And what I mean by that is those guys
been
at
here.
Corner are lower on the depth. You have two proven starters, and those guys fall in behind it.
Yeah.
There's positions on this team where the guys who should be depth are actually vying for starting jobs. And that's the differentiation. So I agree with you on that. But Andrew Callahan taking some pot shots at us, or at least the more optimistic guys on this show, Ted Johnson and Nick Fitzy Stevens. But ESPN looked at the off seasons, graded them. Patriots got a C+, and their biggest move, according to ESPN, was hiring Mike Vrabel.
That was the best one?
Yep.
Okay.
The biggest, the category,
okay.
Biggest move.
I don't argue with that.
The move I liked was hiring Vrabel, so they used Vrabel to answer two categories.
He was the MVP of the offseason per your boy Giardi.
Move I disliked, signing defensive tackle Milton Williams. If you didn't like that, then you can't really like their offseason because that was the biggest move of their offseason. He was a $100 million player.
Let me guess. He didn't play enough snaps.
That is definitely
only 47% of the snaps, even though I'm just going to ignore the fact that he beat single and double teams in the Super Bowl, blah, 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 blah.
Also, and I'm trying to find it real quick, they were a little bit down, more down on, I believe, Davis.
Carlton Davis,
your number two corner opposite Gonzalez now. They said, quote, I believe Davis is a worse player than the man who replaced him in Detroit, that's DJ Reed, yet still cost $18 million a year.
It's not the same. I mean, the DJ Reed's a hell of a cornerback.
He is.
So if he's worse than a hell of a quarterback and just pretty damn good.
But they're also throwing the value in there.
Who cares
did you overpay
what he gets paid?
Him?
Of course you're going to overpay.
Would they have preferred Charvarius Ward, perhaps?
Maybe. Absolutely, sure.
I think he's a hell of a football player.
Sure.
Carlton Davis played a whole lot of man last year, graded out pretty good.
And he's playing opposite an all-pro. He's your number two corner. You didn't bring him in to be your all-pro, be your number one. You brought him in to be your number two. As far as Williams is concerned, because this is the second straight day we've talked about people maybe underrating Williams or him not being a top 10 to D-tackle. Williams earned a contract that, after adjusting for cap inflation, is comparable in fully guaranteed money, $51 million, to what Chris Jones received in 2020, Jonathan Allen in 2021, and Javon Hargrave in 2023. Yeah. Although he's a nice player, they describe him as. Williams also played only 47% of Philadelphia's snaps in 2024 while playing next to other stout defensive linemen.
That's a flawed thing. They're using guys that contract, Chris Jones' contract in 2021. Have you seen how much the salary cap has gone up since 2021?
Mm-hmm.
So it's coming. I mean, Milton Williams, was he a guy that was drafted? Let me look here. Was he drafted late in the draft? Let's see. He was
third round.
Okay,
right?
Third round pick.
Yep.
All right. Look, I just think comparing him to contracts that were 5 years ago is like, that's like, you know, in some businesses, that's like was, you know, from, you know, it just, the money has grown so much that, yes, comparable to those guys, he might sound like he's being overpaid, but that's the going rate. And you got a team that was hard up on getting guys here, so you're going to overpay for some of these positions.
Forget the contract necessarily. Do you think there is a better chance, decent chance, however you want to phrase it, that by midseason we're talking about Milton Williams being a disappointment or an underperformer? Do you think that's a realistic possibility, or are you all in, he's going to fit here, he's going to be good?
I need to know what people's expectations are of him, being the highest paid free agent.
Chris Jones. Honestly, I think Chris Jones.
Then we're going to be disappointed. He's not Chris Jones.
Yeah, I don't know if it's
not
Chris
many
Jones.
Are.
But I think they're expecting him to be disruptive, to be a guy the other team game plans for, to be an impact guy in the middle of the defense.
Or maybe like a Quinnen Williams. Because if the average football player, the average football fan, I'm just guessing, probably knows four or five giant defensive tackles that are massive impact players. So they'd probably jump.
I think he's a notch below that. And I think that's okay. Like I just think did you see what they had before him?
He's not. Yes. He's not Nick Bosa. We'll say
Daniel Aquale.
Not even close.
Hey, no disrespect for Daniel Aquale.
Just listing people they had before.
He went to Pittsburgh.
They weren't exactly Chris Jones that they had.
This
before.
Was mentioned yesterday, but I think it bears repeating. And I know it probably has no impact on the upcoming season and beyond. I'm still blown away by the fact that a guy 6'3", 290 ran a 4.63 40-yard dash and had 34
no
reps.
No chance. I'm saying
so
there's no chance.
Now they're juicing those guns, too?
Yeah.
Is every gun juiced in
your
world?
Welcome to my world.
I mean, I'm looking at it. It says 40-yard dash, 4.63. I'm like, man.
Nope.
That's just no way.
So why? Okay, how did he cheat the system?
He had a 38 vertical. I mean, he had a 10-foot broad jump.
So he's not hyper-athletic. It's all
No. I think he's athletic. I think he's
How does this guy go in the third round with those kind of measures?
Because he went to Louisiana Tech and didn't play
all
the time.
Yeah, but even with that, I mean, when you start to, that's a ridiculous 40 for a guy that size.
That's ridiculous. And what if this year, all of a sudden, against some of these teams, he blasts through the line like with that bench strength and that 40 speed, and you're like, oh no,
I expect him to be an impactful athletic presence.
Here's what I think we'll know. I think we're going to see, you know, as opposed to Godshaw, where all he did was take up double teams and Bill thought he was the greatest, you know, defensive tackle because he knew how to take double.
Top five worst Belichick press.
I think we're going to watch Milton Williams and go, oh, yeah, he's worth it. Like, is he making sacks? Is he making impact plays? Like, we haven't had a defensive lineman on this team in forever and a day that's made any impact plays, really, with other than, you know, 9 sacks against the terrible Chicago Bears in their tackles.
I think it could be as simple as, are we just analyzing who's getting double-teamed? Milton Williams, Christian Barmore, both. Is the other guy taking advantage of his matchup? Sort of that breakdown, and are we seeing that as part of broadcast? Is Tom Brady probably won't do a lot of Patriots games, but whoever does the games, are they breaking that down?
So I will be. I watch every game twice. So
brag.
It's for my job.
Tuesdays with Ted this fall after we knock out the Monday stuff. Tuesdays with Ted, we're really going to get knee-deep in the film. I will say, Ted, I just want to push back a little bit on the haven't had an impact defensive tackle, because the second half of 2023, I really thought Barmore was coming on. He only started 6 games in 23, 64 combo tackles, 39 solo, 13 tackles for loss, 8.5 sacks. So he was really having an excellent, that's why big contract in that offseason, trending upward, and then, oh no, the clotting issue. Like, remember in that Christmas Eve game, he eviscerated the Broncos offensive line single-handedly in the first half, 3 sacks.
Yeah. You know, I changed my mind. You know, Fitzy talked me into it. I changed my mind.
That's pretty good.
No, those are good numbers. I don't know. I guess 2023, I don't remember that being like a big year for.
He was trending the right way, and then it never continued.
Yeah.
That's the problem. That's what
got derailed
there.
By the clotting issue. And he also still has a bulky knee issue that seems to pop up every now and then. That's something to watch for him. If he can be on the field, forget the blood clots. If that's okay and he's on the field,
you know what it is,
then
too?
It's staying healthy with the knee.
You're talking about 2023. When did he get drafted?
21.
It's like, so 2 years before you ever heard from him. Like, right. This guy was supposed to come in and be, oh, he was a second-round pick that really should have been in the top 10. It's like, okay, it's like, where are you for the first year? I mean, you know, here, where are you the second year? Okay. Oh, the third year, you have 8 games, and all of a sudden, you have all these stats. I would question that. That doesn't – where's the – to me, you should have known if he was a good player before his third year in the league.
So, prove-it year. So, you're looking at this as a prove-it year for – a guy like Christian Barmore.
I look at it as, dude, he's not even close to being worth that money. And, I'd like to see him actually be, kind of play to what his salary is.
Okay, then quick question before we go to break. Andy, is there a chance that this positional group, since we just went through all our positional groupings, and it seemed like the majority had defensive line at like 2? Mm-hmm. You had it at 2, Ted had it at 2, I had it at 3. Is there a chance we're overrating the defensive line?
Absolutely. I think we're overrating some of the position
on
groups.
Our team. We're not. I think on this team, they're kind of right where they need to be. This is not a good football team.
Right, but
just because they're the third best unit on this team doesn't mean they're a great unit out, compared to the rest of the NFL.
Context is king. You're right.
I'll just speak for myself. I think these defensive tackles should be the foundation for which the entire defense sort of expands from. That I think that if they're going to be good, they're going to be a good defense, and I think if they're going to be a good defense, it's going to start up front with these D tackles. That's kind of how rank it in there. And then the corners obviously need to do their job in the back end, but it's something we're going to have to keep an eye on. Have we overrated certain position groups? Did we overrate the offseason? Is this team a little bit overrated on this station, WEEI Afternoons, where Andrew Callahan likes to listen but not note who he's talking about when he's on the television.
Folks in the other station.
Put us in your mouth, right? Don't take us out of your mouth. Put us in your mouth.
Save that.
Put us in your mouth.
Blah, yeah. Blah, blah.
Our
blah.
Name. But anyway, let's move on.
Put our name
on.
In your mouth.
It's Throwback Thursday. We're going to have a little fun here. Your favorite and least favorite Patriots seasons of all time. Ted Johnson, yours could be very personal because it could involve your playing career. Mm. For Fitzy and I, it's more as media or fans watching this team from afar. I think you're going to find mine interesting. And yes, we're doing the entire history of the Patriots. Patriots history didn't begin when Bill Belichick arrived in 2000. This franchise existed before that. That's a little clue where I might be going with my favorite and least favorite Patriots history seasons next here on WEEI Afternoons. What fruit
why
do
we,
you get?
Why are we playing that, man?
Yeah. That was not what I wanted. That was my fault.
Ted,
fall on that grenade.
I ever tell you, I was hosting a Super Bowl party with 30-some-odd people for Super Bowl 31, and I was so excited. And
brag.
Ready. Yeah, great story. And when Desmond Howard ran the kickback to make it, I took a football in my hands, drop kicked it, broke a lamp in the room, everybody left.
Yeah.
I was so mad. You had anger issues and you scared people. Hung up on the phone with my dad, tossed the phone, kicked a football. That is one of the 5 most disappointing moments as a Patriots fan. And I can only imagine how much that, after Curtis Martin scored
we got back in the game, right, at halftime. And then to open the second half, we were not in this game. So, two big plays they had to start the halves, right? The third play of the game. The third play of the game, it's a bomb to Andre Rison for a touchdown, and then the famous, Brett Favre pulls his helmet off and he's running around like a jackass.
He was celebrating.
Bet you wanted to
really?
Clean his clock.
Yes. He was celebrating.
And then the start of the second half, that touchdown run, that's what did us in. Mm.
All right, so we had that clip because we're going to do a quick Throwback Thursday. Our favorite and least favorite Patriots seasons. Obviously, Ted Johnson has a decade of playing seasons to go with, but he could also pick other seasons. He's been following this team for a long time, post-playing career, whatever. I would like to start this off, if it's okay with you boys, because I have consecutive seasons which on paper look like they were both successes. But for whatever, this is little fat Andy. This is the years of 1985 and 1986. 1985, everybody knows the story. Wild card team catches fire, beats the Dolphins, goes to the Super Bowl, and gets squashed.
Just curb stomp.
Took a lead, 3-0, and that was it. The game was
Should've
over after that.
Stopped the game right there.
Stopped the game there. Little fat Andy could have gone to bed happy.
Yeah.
But that was the formative year of me becoming a true Patriot fan, like all in. Andre Tippett and those guys loved that team. They took New England over. I don't know if you guys remember, there were a lot of song parodies. Squish the Fish was a whole
New
song.
New England, the Patriots,
awesome.
And we.
Like, I would record. This is the old days, so you'd have to wait for them to play the song on the radio, and then you press record on your tape recorder, record it so I could listen to it again later. I think I still have the tape somewhere. Anyway, so that's my favorite
great
season.
Story.
My least favorite season was the following season. They made the playoffs again, and I'm thinking, we're good now. We're like I'm on board. 10-win, 11-win team they were, and they go to Denver, and Tony effing Eason gets sacked not once, not twice, not three times, not four times, not five, six times. John Hanna was right about that pansy-ass quarterback, and I cried. They lost in Denver, and I cried. 22-17 wasn't a blowout, so the whole game, I think we're in it. We weren't in it. They
it's amazing.
Crushed us.
Nope. Of all the seasons.
And I bawled my little fatty
championship
and cried.
Teams. And a team that lost the Super Bowl is your favorite team?
It's different when you're a kid.
Yeah.
Like, that's the reason I'm a Patriots fan. That's the reason, no disrespect to you, that the greatest linebacker in Patriots history is named Andre Tippett. The dude was a legend.
I'm not going to argue with the Hall of Famer, no.
Ragdolling Ken O'Brien and all those quarterbacks. Yeah. Doing things that would be illegal now, you'd probably get fined and miss games for. But yeah, I fell in love with that team. And then I fell in love so hard that I thought, oh, we'll just go to the Super Bowl every year. And they lost in
those damn Broncos.
Well, we did.
What a ride.
Eventually,
but not then. Not for fat little Andy. Okay, who's up?
Speaking of eventually, I'll go with my favorite season, 2001. How can the finish of a season where a Super Bowl was the last thing that you could have possibly ever expected, the first Super Bowl, you never forget your first time, and so many things came together for me personally in my life that year, met my wife as well. Got just so many aspects of my life that dovetailed into that magical season for
blah,
you guys.
Blah, 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 blah.
Where did we get that drop?
Are you S-ing me?
Nick just did it 10 minutes ago.
Okay. That was my favorite for obvious reasons, culminating, of course, in Vinatieri's 48-yard kick. Still and forever my favorite play in the history of the NFL. My least favorite season, 1990. Boy, did the Patriots suck. There was no point in watching. The fans, much like the games on TV, blacked out all season long. Rod Rust, 1-15. And I'll never forget, I went to a game, and I think it was Sekules or Hodson was the quarterback. They went up like 7-0. They lost like 23-10. I was so cold. I froze from my knees to my ankles, and Papa Gino's wouldn't let me in to use the bathroom, and I think I may have soiled myself. It was possibly the worst time, the worst team. Just a miserable, miserable, miserable operation. The depths that the Patriots traveled to that we as fans of our whole lifetime know, that was the pits.
1-15. That's brutal, man. I covered the Texans. They were 2-14.
That's
and
bad.
that was tough.
I actually became a Raiders fan in that era, and that's when I would watch the Raiders.
I was a Redskins fan. Don't get me wrong. I was Mark Rippon head to toe.
You had to. You had to pick a second team because your team was so bad.
Andy, thank you for finally putting voice to that. Everyone in New England had an alternate team. Dolphins, 49ers, Giants, Redskins, Cowboys, etc.
Okay,
thank you. It is, Ted. They were so bad from like 89 to 92.
The fans shouldn't. If you're a real fan, you stick with your team. But that's
you stuck with your team, but you also wanted a second team to like actually think they had a chance to follow.
Gotcha.
Like, because the season was over.
The games
don't
weren't,
you roll
Ted,
your eyes at us,
Ted? The games literally weren't on television.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, well, that's okay. That's
they weren't.
Fair.
It was all blacked out.
You couldn't see your favorite team. I get it. Okay, mine. You know what? 01 is very difficult to go against because of what happened, but I'm going to go with 04. 04, it was a wagon of a team. I've never played on a team that was as confident as our team. We knew we were going to win it. We knew we were the best team every day, every Sunday when we showed up, and we played like it. We just kind of cruised through the season. We lost a couple games. That Miami game we lost in the last regular season, that Tom just had a weird kind of game.
Didn't he have he fell on his ass and threw an interception?
Something like that. Yeah. It was just bad. I mean, the other game we lost was, to a team that went 15-1 in the Pittsburgh Steelers with Roethlisberger. So, but it was, I mean, we knew we were going to win that Super Bowl against the Eagles. It was just a confidence, and nothing really went wrong that year. Everything was just kind of playing out like it kind of, you know, if you look at the year before in 03, there were a lot of games where we were going into the fourth quarter where we're behind, but we still won. Like, it was more of a nail-biting kind of season where you weren't sure, but, man, we always found ways to win. 04, it was never in doubt from the beginning of the game to the end of the game who was better.
Yep.
So that was a really fun team. And then I think the 2000, Bill's first year, was a very difficult year because he was completely opposite of what Pete was, which was probably too lax, too easy going, too nice. Bill comes in here with these hard-o tactics, and you only win five games. It wasn't a lot of fun. So that I'd say 2000 was my least favorite.
I want to ask about 2004. A, did adding somebody like Corey Dillon, who was such a stud and had such an incredibly great season, did that – What did that add to like feeling like a front?
What did that add? It added 1,600 yards to our offense.
Right. Like, so he was
record
so good.
Setting.
He was phenomenal,
unstoppable.
And for a team that had the defense, it's like we can play the game on our terms.
And Tom, you could see was starting to just his decision making was more and more refined. The ball comes out. It's like, wait a minute, you have a high powered manager, you know, clock manager in Tom Brady,
right?
With a dominant running game in Corey Dillon. With a great defense, forget
it. And then also, how confident were you guys going back for the revenge game against the Steelers in Pittsburgh with Brady having the flu the night before?
Very, very confident. You know, and I was really confident when they opened the game and they kind of marched down, boom, boom, boom. They're on their own. They're on our 35-yard line. It's 4th and 1, and they're going to go for it. Okay, all right. Are you going to go for it? Huh? We stop them. And then the game never, and then we just took off.
Right. That you were the better team. I believe you were favored in Pittsburgh. I'm 99%, because I believe back then Willie said something like, nobody believed we could do this.
That was Rodney.
And we're like, you were favored on the road.
We were, I think, favored, yeah.
You were favored on the, that
as
tells
we should've
you.
Been. Yeah.
I agree with you. Yeah. But that tells you what the world thought of you. You were the better team. You were the team that was expected to win. Like you said, you guys believed internally you were always going to win. Mm-hmm. Externally, most people did too. Famously that season on PFW in Progress, our old podcast, you know, Paul Perillo and myself.
Yeah.
Paul had the nod, he called it. He would look at me, any press box we're in, and it would be sometime generally in the first quarter when something would happen in the game. We're like 6 minutes in, 8 minutes in, whatever it is. He would look at me and he would just go, it's over. And the game, and they were over. They were legitimately over that year, that early. You guys played those games on your terms.
Always.
Low. It didn't matter the score.
I've never had a season like that where it felt like that.
Right. You could be up 6-3 and the game was over.
Literally, Bill would have these, he had these Saturday meetings, which I've always told. It's kind of one of the best coaching moments. Maybe it's too long, but he would say, if we do these three things on offense, we'll win. If we do these three things on defense, we'll win. And we'd go out. And we do those three things.
And win.
And win. And it was like every single week, that's how the formula went. And it never really got off track. There was no real obstacles to have to overcome that year. And it was just a easy kind of – it was easy because we were so good.
Right.
And that's also, you are correct. The Patriots were three-point favorites in Pittsburgh in that AFC championship.
We knew you were going to win.
Two AFC championship games in Pittsburgh that we won.
Yep.
The other one, you guys were 10-point dogs in the other one.
In the other one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was
the
a
Steelers
that was a fun
were
game.
Supposed to win the first one.
Yeah, they were.
The
they
second
Troy
one.
Troy Brown. Yeah.
You
Troy
guys
Brown.
Were supposed to win. Ted All right, Johnson. That's going to do it for 4 o'clock football. We did a little looking ahead to the 2025 Patriots, but we also looked back at some of the fun and not-so-fun seasons in Patriots history. But up next, we got to revisit the Boston Red Sox. They're rolling on the field, and they're feuding off of it. Well, at least they're play-by-play guy is Will Fleming versus Will Clark. The feud continues. And by the way, Will Clark, 617-779-7937. Phone lines are open if you want to call. You had a lot to say on your little podcast via Zoom. You got anything to say on the radio waves? Ted Johnson's here to hear it. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Our phone lines are open,